have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum.
I'm Ann Northrup, feeling nostalgic about the pictures of us in the studio years ago before COVID hit.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe someday we'll get back there.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
Well, in the news this week, Biden administration has exempted a Christian college from abiding by laws against sexual harassment of LGBTQ people.
You know, half the country is going to declare itself religiously affiliated soon, so they don't have to follow any laws. But a federal court has blocked an anti-trans law from taking effect in Idaho, for the moment anyway.
Speaking of religion, the New Jersey Supreme Court has upheld the firing of a teacher at a Catholic school who got pregnant outside of marriage.
Charming. That sounds like 1961. LGBTQ veterans suing the Department of Defense for less bureaucracy in securing honorable discharges.
The first out trans man in U.S. history to become a judge is inaugurated in New York amidst much fanfare.
Yeah, there are a few trans women who are judges elsewhere. A DeSantis education aide who worked against LGBTQ and racial inclusion has now become the Secretary of Education in Arkansas and is getting right to work with something really bad.
Which is why my niece, who worked there as a teacher, has fled. Equality Florida has started an LGBTQ parents' rights group. We're fighting back.
Yes, by pointing out that we are parents and deserve our parental rights, too. The president of the American Library Association is being attacked by the right wing for semi-facetiously describing herself as a Marxist lesbian. She thought it was funny. They thought it was, you know, a hanging offense.
Two biggest curse words in the public language. The winner of Mexico's equivalent of Big Brother on TV is a beloved trans woman.
Celebrations in the street. Two gay men have been viciously stabbed outside a gay bar in London.
In a first, an HIV positive service member got his commission as an officer.
And we'll review the Amazon Prime gay themed rom-com Red, White and Royal Blue. Sorry, I had to make myself watch it. And some, is that too much of a giveaway? And some show openings in New York, including one starring Eric McCormick of Will and Grace fame.
Yeah, I was going to tell people when I was ready to review the Red, White, and Royal Blue, if you're looking forward to this, cover your ears. Anyway, the Biden.
Well, opinions are split, we'll say that.
Biden administration. No, I'm not inclined to vote for the other party, but very disappointed, more than disappointed, outraged that the administration has given a religious exemption to Baylor University, a private Christian university in Waco, Texas, big one, you know, has about 20,000 students, that stands accused of doing nothing to stop sexual harassment of LGBTQ students. And Baylor is the first ever to request such an exemption from the sexual harassment protections of Title IX, and the first to receive it. Baylor denied charter to the LGBTQ student organization. It pressures university media not to report on LGBTQ events and protests. The Department of Education says, well, it's not a blanket exemption, but it is more than disturbing.
Well, and remember that Baylor was presided over by Ken Starr for a while as president, who covered up allegations of rape against members of the football team. So this is your fine Christian university that that the administration is supporting. But this is, you know, we have talked about dozens and dozens of religiously affiliated colleges and universities that have gotten exemptions from all sorts of non-discrimination laws and now sexual harassment laws. This is a terrible, terrible thing in this country, and makes and is just based on this phrase in the Constitution that talks about religious freedom. But how this keeps getting interpreted as a free pass for all these heinous things is a complete mystery to me. I have
of course, enlightened religious schools, and you know, and there are some, you know, they would never think of doing anything like this, and they welcome their LGBTQ student groups, et cetera. But the ones who don't are getting away with it.
Yeah, well, in fact, well, we'll get to the other religious-oriented story. But there's a why did I not write it down? The school in the Catholic school somewhere in the United States that has been told it can no longer call itself a Catholic school because they insist on flying a rainbow flag and a Black Lives Matter flag. Right. And they just said, you know, we are an inclusive school and we want to demonstrate that and support all our students. And the archdiocese in that territory said, well, then you are no longer a Catholic school.
Well, and in New Jersey, the Supreme Court of the state ruled that a Catholic school, St. Teresa's in Kenilworth, could fire an art teacher for having premarital sex. Victoria Crisitello lost her job about a decade ago when she told the principal that she was pregnant and unmarried. The court said Catholic schools can require employees to abide by Catholic law. The school did not look into whether other teachers had violated the code or pressed it. I mean, she was just obviously pregnant, so she had to talk about it, and she was not married. It's just, you know.
Well, you know, they don't stop every car that's speeding on the highway either, thank heavens.
Well.
But they can pick and choose, but it just boggles the mind.
Well, in civil rights law, we would call that disparate impact. It's impacting her, but not everybody else, and that's the issue.
Well, so, I'll use that the next time I get a speeding ticket.
Oh, good luck.
Or a red light.
And then if we're staying on religion, in Oklahoma, the ACLU and Americans United for the Separation of Church and State are suing the state of Oklahoma to block it from the first religious public chartered school in the United States, St. Isidore of Seville Catholic Virtual School. They say it violates the state constitution and the charter board's own regulations. The school refuses to abide by anti-discrimination prohibitions that all charters are supposed to follow, including non-discrimination based on sexual orientation and other characteristics, including disability. They say the school will indoctrinate students into a faith, and that is not kosher with public policy.
Well, you know, each step is worse than the previous. They insist on their constitutional right to discriminate, but they ignore the constitutional prohibition against establishment of religion and are happy to take public funds to create their school. It's insane.
All right, Stan, going back to a federal issue, five veterans are suing the Department of Defense for failing to overturn their dishonorable discharges for being gay and failing to update discriminatory language on these their discharge papers that refer to their real or perceived sexuality. They're not seeking damages. They just want updates to their paperwork. And while there has been some progress in updating these things or, you know, getting these upgraded, the suit says the burden should be on the Department of Defense to upgrade them without the veterans having to engage in a long and confusing bureaucratic process. The DOD says it has done outreach to inform all vets who believe they've suffered injustices that there's a process, but it's apparently burdensome.
Yes. And corollarily, I just made up a word. One of my favorite military stories of this week is our fearless leader, Donald Trump, claiming that when he threw trans people out of the military, when he was president, the generals and other leaders of the branches said to him, said publicly that they were against that, but said privately to him, "Oh, we agree with you. You did the right thing. We support you."
Which he's a rat, isn't he? He's a rat. That's called ratting.
He is a liar, is what he is. That is absolutely not true. The military leaders were very staunch supporters of trans service in the military. And the reason he kicked trans people out was because Mike Pence came to him with all his right-wing evangelical friends and said, "You've got to do this." And he said, "Yes, Mike. Yes, focus on the family. Yes, Alliance Defending Freedom. I'll be happy to do that." And he did it. And it wasn't until then Biden got back in that trans people were allowed to serve again.
And it was nice to see him get indicted again this week in Georgia. The thing that worries me the most, of course, this is a state where the governor cannot pardon somebody. And Kemp doesn't seem inclined to pardon him anyway, but he can't do it in Georgia. That's not allowed but by governors. But it's the fact that the legislature just passed in May a bill to remove DAs they don't like. And that could happen to Fannie.
Just like DeSantis in Florida, who just removed the second Democratic DA that he didn't like.
Absolutely disgusting. As is the Boy Scouts. All the time the Boy Scouts were keeping gay men from being scoutmasters, they were covering up almost 100,000 cases of sexual abuse and scouting. And that's the subject of a new documentary, Scouts Honor, coming to Netflix on September 6th.
Okay, I'll look for that. All right. In better news, but related to DeSantis again, Dwayne Wade, basketball star, husband of actress Gabrielle Union, parent of several children, including a trans girl, and leading them to leave Florida and move to California so she would not be mistreated in the DeSantis administration. But he was inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame. And he was asked about the fact that, as we reported last week, the Orlando Magic gave $50,000 to DeSantis. And he's very outspoken politically on these issues. But in this case, he said, "I don't think I want to get into that anymore.
I'm trying to help where the need is and where I can. But I think it may be because he's contemplating a run for the United States Senate."
He was asked about it.
He didn't deny it. That's a yes.
Well, I won't deny it either. Yes, I will.
All right. All right. So let's stay in Florida. So we've talked about Ron DeSantis's destruction of the New College of Florida, formerly liberal arts school, now stacked with fascist superstars in charge of trying to impose their order the way Viktor Orban does in Hungary. One third of the faculty has left. Students are fleeing. And I noticed, did we talk about this? Hampshire College in New England has offered
taking them, yes, and offering financial aid
to their college students without tuition increases. 35 are going, 30 more are interested out of a student body of only 700. And Christopher Rufo, the far-right activist now on the board, will continue his war on gender ideology and queer theory. Students who are coming in have lower SAT scores. They're mostly recruiting jocks to come to this school. I'm not knocking jocks, but these ones have lower SAT scores. And it doesn't even really have sports facilities, so they're doing it anyway.
And I wouldn't knock lower SAT scores. I'm for everybody, but to get rid of a substantial population just because you don't like their political point of view and the faculty also that goes along with that, and then bring in people who you think align with your political point of view is heinous.
Well, let's finish up on Florida. By the way, the Florida Education Department has certified these Prager University videos that include actually Christopher Columbus saying, slavery is as old as time. It has taken place in every corner of the world, even amongst the people I just left. And, you know, of course, homosexuality has existed across the entirety of time, but you banned talking about that.
Yeah.
Anyway, Equality Florida has formed Parenting with Pride to advocate for LGBTQ families. The Republican right has been scoring a lot of political points, acting as if they're the ones for parental rights, but they really only mean anti-LGBTQ parents, not parents who are LGBTQ or have LGBTQ kids or other family members or who like us. So they've signed up 1,000 parents already, and they're determined to stand up to the bully organizations like Moms Against Liberty.
And lest you think these bad acts are confined to Florida.
One more thing on Florida, may I?
Sure.
All right. The Florida GOP chair, Christian Ziegler, said he's pleased at what he calls perverted families leaving the state in droves over the anti-LGBTQ laws there.
Very short-sighted. But a DeSantis administration executive has fled the state. He has a new job in Alabama as what, the commissioner of education?
Arkansas. Isn't it?
Oh, yes, you're right. It is. It is Arkansas. Sorry.
Sorry.
I put that down wrong. So he has gone to Arkansas. And what's happening in Arkansas now? They have rejected the advanced placement college board test on Black history, because that, like the AP test that was rejected in Florida, is too liberal, too progressive, too.
Yeah, and this Jacob Oliva, who is under federal investigation for a bid rigging scheme in Florida benefiting a DeSantis crony. And he spoke at the Moms for Liberty conference naturally.
But Sarah Huckabee Sanders now has him in Arkansas and wreaking havoc in the education system there.
Okay. All right. So Republicans are attacking the president of the American Library Association, Emily Drabinsky. Got a picture of her because she described herself in a tweet, again, being somewhat, you know, playful over a year ago. I'm a Marxist lesbian who believes that collective power is possible to build and can be wielded for a better world. And I'm president-elect of the ALA. I'm so excited for what we will do together. And of course, as I said, Marxist and lesbian are the two top epithets in the Republican Party. You know,
she's a librarian at CUNY here in New York City, the City University of New York. And that was clearly just a, oh, my God, look what happened kind of tweet. But the right wing will pounce on anything.
Montana has cut ties with the ALA over the tweet. Senators Rubio, Kramer and Braun want federal funds for the American Library Association halted. And in January, the ALA will host an Intellectual Freedom Summit in D.C. anyway, which is a big deal for them.
Well, the librarians have always been a wonderfully progressive group of people who do believe in freedom and free access to information. So I hope they continue that and will stand up for their new president, Ms. Drabinsky, and fight back.
Yeah. And speaking of presidents, President Obama's biographer, David Garrow, uncovered a letter Obama wrote to a girlfriend when he was 21, where he mused about his androgynous mind and hopes to see people as humans, not through the lens of a binary gender categories. Here's the quote, and it's a little something. In regard to homosexuality, I must say I believe it is an attempt to remove oneself from the present, a refusal to perpetuate the endless farce of earthly life. You see, I make love to men daily, but in my imagination. That's pretty interesting for somebody who once supported same-sex marriage, then didn't, and then did.
Yeah, and he wrote this evidently when he was 21. First of all, that's a heck of a letter to write to your girlfriend. Second, I'm not thrilled with him describing homosexuality as some fantasy land and escape from daily life. But it'd be nice, maybe, but really, we're all just down to earth. But he was 21, so I'll give him a little pass on that. I'd like to think he's a little more educated now.
I better go burn some letters. All right. Going back to the States, in Texas, Dallas Pride had planned a night of 1,000 drag queens on August 26 to protest the anti-drag law going into effect there next month, barring an injunction. But they've canceled it due to the fact that they didn't raise enough money, they say. How about just doing it? What do you need money for? Just turn people out in the streets.
Well, this is the problem with prides all over the country. Too much reliance on money and not enough just on people in the street or in drag or whatever. I want to go back to an education story for a moment. In Idaho, the teacher of the year, Karen Lauritsen, I think that's, I can't read my own writing, a fourth grade teacher, has had to flee to Illinois to a college job because she is being relentlessly attacked for pro-LGBTQ social media posts.
Well, let's stay in Idaho then, because the federal district court there blocked enforcement of school facilities law that singles out transgender students for discrimination, excluding trans students from multi-user restrooms and other school facilities that are aligned with their gender identity, and that defines sex as limited to chromosomes and reproductive anatomy, whatever that all this is. But it's a Lambda legal case.
And it's a temporary restraining order, but the court explicitly said that they were letting everybody maintain local control and adapt their situations as necessary in terms of bathroom use or whatever. And I thought that was a very enlightened kind of approach. I mean, I don't want local places banning trans people from the correct bathroom, but the judge seemed to get it as to what the issues were.
And the judge got it in Arizona. In a federal district court there certified a National Center for Lesbian Rights case challenging the state law requiring surgery to get gender markers changed on your documents as a class action.
Yeah. You know, judges, not bad. A lot of them. We'll see. Oh, this new, I digress. The judge in the Georgia Trump case, 34 years old. He's been on the bench for less than a year. Appointed by Brian Kemp, has a somewhat right-wing record. I'm not crazy about that.
Former prosecutor, people who have, you know, served with him or have regard for him, but that, of course, was a story I read in the Wall Street Journal. So,
how did he get chosen? Was this a random selection?
Total random. How do we get Eileen Cannon in Florida?
Well, and how did we get Judge Chutkan in D.C., who is, you know, woman of the year, potentially?
Right. All right. Target stores are being sued by a shareholder, Stephen Miller, over its $14 billion loss in market value amid the LGBTQ campaign backlash. This is his America First Legal Foundation that's going after lots of corporations for their diversity programs. Target has offered a Pride line of merchandise for more than a decade. Nobody said squat about it. But now, of course, it's all politicized.
In Pennsylvania, we have the third local court decision allowing a trans man who is an ex-felon to change his name. The state law forbids ex-felons to change their names on the grounds that they're maybe trying to hide and commit other crimes. But with trans people, these are legitimate, of course, identity changes. And this guy fought long and hard for this and won the court decision. So this is, as I say, the third court decision like this in Pennsylvania. It'd be nice if they changed the law to make it easier.
And, you know, some of you complained to me that, you know, we give you a lot of bad news, but I'm going to go back to Florida for a good story. We have the first high school named for a gay man. It just opened, Dr. Joaquin Garcia High School in Lake Worth Beach. he ran the El Cid Animal Clinic, but he was a big gay activist and served all the gay organizations, he and his husband, and AIDS causes, and they named a school for him.
And I'll give you a bad story with a happy ending from Ohio, where a lesbian state highway patrol officer, Stacy Arnold Yerkes, had been harassed for years by her fellow officers. Terrible stuff where they, you know, put stuff in her locker and called her horrible names and just harassed her all day long. Well, she has now won $2.6 million in a lawsuit that she brought against the department for this kind of behavior.
Great. And in speaking of harassment in Wisconsin, a Republican state senator was reported to have called a 13-year-old, I'm going to use the word, a fag at a county board meeting. There were four witnesses to this, and it got on social media and then was reported by the Wausau Pilot and Review, which is the local news site. This guy, Senator Corey Tomchick, sued the paper for defamation, said, "I never said it," and he lost because he's a public figure and they had four witnesses. But the paper incurred $150,000 in legal fees, and now the senator is appealing the decision. He admits he's used the slur on other occasions.
Says against his gay brother.
They called him a faggot as a joke, he said. He's a charmer. But he's loaded. He's got a big business. He can afford all this. And so there's a way you can help the paper, and we're going to put it in our email. I've already made a contribution to that.
And similarly, there's the story of the paper elsewhere that is being driven out of business because the local police raided them and took all their computers, their files, their everything, because they thought that the paper had, been mean to them?
And the co-founder of the paper, an older woman, died the next day of a heart attack.
Yep. I mean,
this is horrendous. This is, you know, fascist stuff that the right wing used to complain about, you know?
Yes, but now is enacting... as in Putin, as in Orban, as in Bolsonaro, the right wing is just, here I go again, relentless, cruel, and shameless. Their aim is to destroy. When they say they want to destroy democracy, they mean that quite literally.
Yes, they have. I mean, they are. DeSantis is always saying, what I'm doing is the will of the people, because, you know, the legislature voted for it, this gerrymandered legislature with no regard for the whole of the populace, and that we're here to serve everybody. You never hear a guy like DeSantis say, I'm here for everybody. You hear a lot of Democrats say it, but you never hear that from somebody like DeSantis. But better news in Wisconsin, the Republicans are struggling to find a credible candidate to go up against Senator Tammy Baldwin next year. The recruiters are getting turned down again and again and again, which is encouraging. But
it's a miracle.
2024 is an extremely challenging year. You heard it here. You didn't hear it here first, but you better get used to it for Senate Democrats and 2026, for that matter. I'm much more optimistic about taking back the House.
And we have some more crocodile tears in Massachusetts from a heterosexual couple who have been rejected as foster parents because they say that if they ended up with a foster child who was LGBTQ, they would tell that child that they would have to live a chaste life.
Yes, this is Michael and Kitty Burke.
Yeah, they're Catholic.
Yeah,
and they say, go ahead.
Well, I mean, you know, they were asked, you know, what about the kids LGBTQ who struggle with gender identity? And Kitty said, let's take the T out of it and call gender-affirming care chemical castration. She said, we'd love the child, but, you know, you mentioned how Michael said he'd likely attend the child's wedding if LGBT and wouldn't kick him out over it.
and wouldn't subject them to conversion therapy. And, you know, they did get a conditional approval, but then the larger board looked at this and said, no, this is not a good idea.
I would not rely on those semi-promises from the prospective father. And they're being represented in their lawsuit against Massachusetts by the Beckett Fund, which is the twin sibling of the Alliance Defending Freedom. Same thing, which makes you think that they've been put up to it to bring this lawsuit to try to change this system.
In New York, the 17-year-old charged in the murder of O'Shea Sibley pled not guilty on Friday. Dmitry Popov was remanded to a juvenile detention center and told by the judge, watch yourself there, you know, which is, it's a terrible, whether you're in Rikers Island or in a juvenile facility, you're in a lot of danger because they're not run properly.
He is rumored to be planning a self-defense defense in this case. The video, as we've told you, is a little hard to discern at the actual moment of the killing, but they go back and forth at each other for a couple of minutes before then.
Well, as we've spoken about, I covered the trial of Abel Cedeno, who was a kid in school who was attacked physically, but he pulled a knife and ended up killing one of the people attacking him. And basically the judge said, it's not justification. If you are met with non-deadly force, you can't beat it with deadly force, which is what Popov did.
Well, for Abel Cedeno, you know, if you're being attacked by a group of people and you are literally in fear of your life and the school is not doing anything to protect you, I would argue that you could certainly interpret that as self-defense.
That was what was argued. It didn't go over with the judge.
Now, last week we talked about the guy, presumably with some mental illness, who's been wandering the Brooklyn Promenade and spewing homo hatred at passersby. And I think this is a new story this week that he is believed to have slashed a young man, 21 years old, while yelling homophobic slurs. The guy attacked went to the hospital with hand injuries, and the attacker escaped. You know, his picture has been all over everything. He was reported to the cops before this attack, and yet he was able to pull off this attack.
Yeah, the cops would say things like, yeah, you know, you probably want to avoid that area. I'm picking this guy up.
You know, where are the cops hanging out if not at an area where there is a guy who is?
They don't have cameras. They don't have cameras there. Somebody took a video. I understand,
but where are the patrol officers? Exactly. Why are they not patrolling that area with that kind of threat?
Well, maybe we'll get some justice from the new trans judge. The first out trans man judge in the United States was sworn in the LGBTQ Community Center this week. Seth Marnin. M-A-R-N-I-N, is now a New York Court of Claims judge. Among those on hand for this ceremony were Governor Hochul, who nominated him, Attorney General Tish James. He spoke at a rally 5 years ago about the importance of being out as trans, but also for allies to be out, for trans people to drive the narrative about their identity, to do things that are uncomfortable, difficult, or inconvenient, and to have hope. You're here.
Wait, put that picture up again, please. I'm not quite finished with that. To the right there is his rabbi, Sharon Kleinbaum, who was very involved in helping get him nominated and confirmed. And that is a picture by our friend Donna Cito, yes. who documents important events like this in the LGBTQ community in New York.
And I don't know where Donna gets the energy. She is everything.
I think she is compelled to do this. And it's a wonderful, wonderful life and service. And we're very grateful she's out there doing
it. We love Donna. Should we talk about some of the people we lost?
I was going to go through a little more news first. In Minneapolis, Minnesota, since we were talking about the guy with the knife here in New York, a man with four felony convictions for violent acts has been sentenced to 59 months in prison. I think we told this story a while ago. He went into a gay bar and threatened everyone with a gun, and they got him out of there without harm. And then they called the cops. When the cops came, he was back in the bar playing pool. I don't know whether he still had his gun, but this is a very strange incident. And I also wanted to mention that the Journal of the American Medical Association surgery publication has reported on a University of Michigan follow-up study of 139 trans men who were patients between 1990 and 2020 and asked them about whether they were satisfied having had top surgery. And they reported 100% satisfaction with having done that. Great. So, good. All right, now on to people we have lost. Well,
John Barrett died. He was the celebrity hairstylist. Died at the age of 66 of blood cancer. His clients range from Princess Diana to Reese Witherspoon to Beyonce. He recently did Martha Stewart for her Sports Illustrated swimsuit shoot. He was known for his shop there at Bergdorf Goodman. Born in Ireland, raised in London, and made his name in New York. And a much beloved figure. I mean, I'm seeing friends on Facebook talk about him who've had contact with him, who said he was just a terrific guy.
Well, my favorite story about him is when he was young and just trying to break into the business and an assistant or whatever in a London salon, Liz Taylor came in one day wanting her hair done by her stylist, whose name was also John. And when she was told he wasn't there, she looked at John Barrett and said, "Well, you'll do." And his career was launched because she loved what he did. And he worked with her thereafter.
And then there's Amos Bonnercher, photographer, 86, from Baltimore. Now, this was quite a character and quite an artist.
Read that caption at the bottom of that's a self-portrait of him. It says at the bottom, "Thinking about America, seriously, wondering about the shoes."
He did that in a lot of his photos. He took a lot of photos of nude young men and wrote little things about them in the margins as well. He found his models on the street, in clubs, and gay bars, unapologetically homoerotic nudes. He humanized people that few people think about. He sought them out to document the tragedy of their circumstances, his adopted son and former partner, Bill, said.
That's a portrait entitled "The Hustler." But yes, he seems, I was sorry not to know him. He seemed like such a great guy.
Yeah, 86. All right. In Los Angeles, the home in Westlake of gay activist and archivist, the late Morris Kite, was unanimously named an historic site by the LA City Council. There's Morris. His home, which he occupied from 1967 to 74, was considered one of the birthplaces of the modern LGBTQ civil rights movement. The Gay Liberation Front in LA was founded there. It's associated with the founding of the Christopher Street West Parade and the founding of the Gay Community Center there. But in the 1950s, he created an underground social service network for gay men way back then, just to help people, his friends out.
Sounds like every meeting in LA was held at that house. And the council has mandated that the house remain because they're talking about a lot of development in that area. But the house must be renovated to a state where people can visit it as an historic site and will remain intact as it is.
Yeah, we knew him. I mean, we would run into him at national meetings and things like that. He was at the One Archives out there in LA. Yeah. And just a terrific activist and pioneer.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And am I misremembering his involvement in the fairies, or am
I'm
I thinking?
Sure. I'm not sure. We'll look it up. I don't, you know, of course, I associate.
I could be wrong.
Harry Hay.
That's who I'm thinking of, Harry Hay. Never mind. All right, international news.
Yeah. Tell us about Zoe Terraces.
Well, Zoe Terrace is an actor in a movie called Talk to Me, and is non-binary, trans masculine, and was just in the movie as an actor. Not there wasn't any trans theme in it. They were not asserting their identity and in press about it or anything. But the government of Kuwait doesn't like having anyone like that in public in any form. And so they have banned the movie.
What do they want us to do? Disappear, of course, and just be wiped off the face of the earth.
Well, that's the point. And that's what I think is not talked about enough, is they really, whether it's Ron DeSantis or, I don't know, every right-wing organization in the U.S. or Kuwait or everywhere else, they want us gone. Gone. We are just a burr under their saddle. They want us to disappear.
We're not going anywhere here at Gay USA. It's
except that we're aging.
1985. Barbie was also banned in Kuwait, but apparently is finding an audience in Saudi Arabia. And then in Lebanon, the culture minister wants to ban Barbie for promoting homosexuality.
They're That's calling it immoral.
Anne, you saw it.
I was disappointed would be an understatement. I mean, it has its moments, but really it's a little.
It's only the most popular movie in the country.
Hey. My tastes are idiosyncratic, as are everybody's. But I certainly don't think it's an immoral movie, which is what the governments of Kuwait and Lebanon are calling it.
So here's sort of my favorite story of the week. In Mexico, a trans former sex worker and internet personality, Wendy Guevara, 30 years old. She has 5 million followers on Instagram and 2 million on TikTok. She won first place on the reality series La Casa Famosas Mexico, their version of Celebrity Big Brother, the first trans winner. She won over the public with her charming personality and, wait for it, her staggering hot dog guzzling capabilities. Here's the big thing. Her win turned out thousands of Mexicans in the streets, celebrating her victory, shutting down streets in Mexico City and other cities. She's now considered the most beloved person in Mexico. So it's a big win against transphobia.
And that's what a lot of the talk is about, is how she has now suddenly, instantly transformed Mexico into no longer a transphobic or homophobic country. I find this a little hard to believe. They've been fined repeatedly for their homophobic chants at soccer stadiums, and other incidents. But she has certainly swept the nation with her celebrity and popularity.
Wendy, come to Florida, or maybe Argentina, because the front runner for president is now the far right winger, Javier Milei, M-I-L-E-I, the Trump of that country. He won a primary election. The election's in October with a likely runoff in November, but the country is reeling from 110% inflation, and this guy would push an abortion ban, loosen gun laws, says sex education is a plot to destroy the family, even though he brags about engaging in threesomes. He is described as an abused child and perpetually enraged as an adult. He opposes same-sex marriage, of course, which they have in Argentina.
He's also described as a daytime TV buffoon, and he thinks global warming is a socialist lie. He would like to abolish public education and the ministries of culture, the environment, women, social security, labor, education, Science, public works.
Inflation was running rather high in Germany when they elected their dictator.
Right. Well, that's where they're headed. And there is high inflation in Argentina.
Oh, it's
insane. And corruption.
That's insane.
Yeah. All right. In China, there's a new real crackdown on any symbols of LGBTQ people. People going to concerts have been told they have to turn around their T-shirts that have rainbows on them. A Hong Kong radio show that's been on the air for 17 years has now been shut down. It's a new crackdown there.
You know, when I was in London, I noticed rainbows all over the place and children's playgrounds and everything. It was, you know, of course, in this country, people would spray paint that, I suppose. But anyway, what terrible thing that happened, two men were stabbed outside a gay bar there, two brewers in Clapham in South London, in what police are investigating as a homophobic attack. This gentleman on yellow said, I've not been left feeling sad nor angry or confused. I've just been left with so many questions to think what can lead to changing a person's mind that much that they feel it's okay to attack anyone, whatever the reason. And how can we change that? But he says he feels very comforted by the LGBTQ community, his family.
I agree with those questions. There's also an escalating witch hunt against gay people in Ethiopia. The government's going door to door to try to round people up and incarcerate them or get them out of the country. And in Germany, the LGBTQ Holocaust Museum in Berlin was defaced with slurs, vandalism, and attempted arson. And the thinking is that the museum has a portion of it that is a sort of window in a wall where you look in and you see two men kissing, and that is so upsetting to some people that it provokes attacks like this.
Well, I'm going to go back to the United Kingdom for a second. The Labour Party, which is leading in the polls to replace the Conservatives at the next election, which isn't until 2025, their leader, Keir Starmer, had a shadow minister lay out the party's change of tone on sex and gender issues, writing, you have a right to change your gender, but that sex and gender are different. The safeguards are needed to protect women and girls from predators who might abuse the system, which is a right-wing talking point. They're retaining the current requirement of a diagnosis of gender dysphoria to get your gender change. Conservatives, you know, were behind self-ID back in 2015, and now everybody's abandoning that.
Can't they make up their mind? All right, on to AIDS news.
Well, before that, Uganda's president is defiant in the face of the World Bank cutting them off. They're talking about the existing $5.2 billion they're getting, they're still going to get. Anyway, and in Malaysia, they've criminalized the sale or possession of pride swatches last Thursday, which can result in prison sentences. Pride swatches. The watches.
Yeah, I know.
All right.
Good news back in the United States, where Nick Harrison, who has been in the Army, that is Nick in the middle, since 2020, served two tours in the Middle East and wound up in 2012 being diagnosed with HIV. Now, there are rules about people with HIV serving around the world, and he had to fight with a lawsuit that he instituted 5 years ago to allow him to be a commissioned officer living with HIV in the U.S. Army. And he won his lawsuit, and that was a picture of him going through the commissioning ceremony last weekend to finally become a commissioned officer in the U.S. Army with HIV. Congratulations.
Yeah, when he sued, the administration just dropped the discriminatory policy. Maybe Tommy Tuberville would like to bring it back.
Ah, yes, he'll fold
that. Taking it back, COVID is back. That's all I'm going to say. It's on the rise again. Take precautions.
Which may be why we're not back in the studio at the moment.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to take us to entertainment news.
Let's go.
Okay. I'll start with Billy Porter, who is complaining that the SAG-AFTRA strike has so cut into his income that he has to sell his house. And he's particularly mad, as is everyone, at Bob Iger, the head of Disney, who, you know, talks about how the greedy actors are trying to hold out for too much. Meanwhile, he's making $78,000 a day. And Billy Porter had a few choice words for him.
Billy is also going through a divorce, which is costing him a lot, apparently, and is lashing out, I think. But he sounds pretty bitter. He said some nasty things about Anna Wintour. That wasn't nice.
Yeah, that too.
All right.
To happier news. Well, or maybe not. Red, White, and Royal Blue.
I was looking forward to it on Amazon Prime based on...
I don't know why.
It was based on a best-selling book by Casey McQuinton that was well-regarded. It was directed by Matthew Lopez, who won the Tony for The Inheritance, and co-written by him. And again, before you listen to our review, I know from many Facebook posts, many of you loved it, some of you cried. Don't listen to what I've turned the sound off here. But the dialogue sounded as if it could have been written by ChatGPT.
And I have seen Hallmark Christmas movies that are wittier and cleverer than this.
I'm with the BBC reviewer who wrote that it doesn't make any astute observations about romance, privilege, or being LGBTQ, and full of lazy cliches. Lovers of the book were really... Now, you can't do everything in the book. The movie's only 2 hours. But they missed a lot of the key supporting players. And Lopez said, well, I had to just focus on the two guys because, you know...
I think that's a little revelatory. I had to focus on the two guys. They're the ones we care about. Really? Couldn't you give us a little more credit than that?
And then out actor Stephen Fry, who I really love, he does a turn as an uptight king playing against type. He said he enjoyed doing it, but it was pretty ugly. And Uma Thurman was preposterous.
Ridiculous.
with that southern accent. And of course, the son doesn't speak with the southern accent. He's from Texas. She does. Usually it's the kids who speak with the accent because they want to get along with their peers. Look, it's apparently teaching a lot of here's a plus. It's apparently teaching a lot of non-gay people that gay men can have intercourse facing each other. This became a thing on the internet. We can't do that, can they?
Look, if it's educating people, if people are enjoying it, fine. But if you are beyond that kind of education want something a little more sophisticated, go elsewhere.
Our movie reviewer, Chris Cooper, called it fluff nonsense, but fun, if you can stomach the dominant gay archetype of pretty young hairless guys going at it. He predicts a sequel. Now, Chris Cooper, by the way, was profiled in the New York Times. They do a thing about what do you do with your Sunday? And there he is with his partner, John Zaya. They're out there in the park. I believe it's Tompkins Square Park near where they live. He's up early on Sundays, meditates on the roof, heads for a workout for 2 hours, eats with his partner, and then walks in the park and tries to take in a movie.
Well, if you've seen him on the Extraordinary Birder series, you can see that he works out 2 hours a day or whatever. He
is an inspiration to us all.
Yeah. But when I opened up the paper and saw it, my immediate reaction was, you again.
Oh, no. Come on. Can't get enough of Chris.
I love Chris. It's just...
You've got to ride the wave, Ann.
And God bless him for doing it. And I couldn't think of a better person to have that. But really, my comment is about the news media, which doesn't have a lot of imagination and tends to ride the wave itself.
I really wouldn't want to talk about my Sundays because I just don't do anything particular other than space out. So I'm caught up on New York theater after my time in London. And my favorite of the week was The Shark is Broken,
about the three stars of Jaws 50 years ago, cooling their heels while they couldn't, while they had to wait for the mechanical shark to get fixed. It's written by Ian Shaw there on the right, who is the son of Robert Shaw, who starred in the movie and died right afterwards. He's absolutely hilarious and a little scary, and he mixes it up there with Alex Brightman in the middle playing nervous, neurotic Richard Dreyfuss, who's also hilarious, and Colin Connell as Roy Scheider, the straight man. It's at the Golden Theater. That's my recommendation.
I heard the Shaw son interviewed on a radio interview, and he was quite charming. I liked him a lot.
And he did a good job on this. Now, moving into the 1980s, Back to the Future, the musical, which was a big hit in London, starring the DeLorean time machine. The cast is fine. That's Roger Bart, as we love him, on as Doc Brown, and Casey Likes, a promising young actor, as Marty McFly. But the music just sort of slows things down a bit, as far as I'm concerned. It ends with some great special effects. I liked the Michael J. Fox movie a lot, but not everything needs to be made into a musical.
I wish you could convey that thought to some of the writers and producers.
And then I saw Flex at Lincoln Center. It's a play about a black girls basketball team in 1997 in Arkansas by Candace Jones and directed by Liliana Blaine Cruz, themselves former basketball players. And there's a lot of basketball playing in the show. The five girls are played by a very engaging ensemble, plus their coach, Christina Clark. And their bonding and conflicts play out. It could use some trimming at 2 hours and 20 minutes, and it runs through August 20th. But it's very,
I've been curious about that and whether.
Yeah, it definitely has its moments.
Okay. But trimming is a good instruction for almost everything.
Okay. And I had been looking forward to The Cottage by Sandy Rustin, starring Eric McCormack there, a sex comedy. He's there on the left. Set in an English country house in the 1920s, directed by Jason Alexander. But despite a very game and energetic cast, there was much too much mugging and not enough earned laughs. Parts of the audience enjoyed it immensely. I laughed at the hardest at an extended, pardon me, fart joke from Lily Cooper, she's in the gray outfit second there from the right, who was pretty funny, but not for me.
Well, I'm looking forward to going to see the production of Forever After, an old Doric Wilson play put on by the longstanding theater organization TOSIS, The Other Side of Silence. So this is a revival of a Doric Wilson play. He wrote wonderful things, and we lost him some years ago. And so this, I think, is a farce of sorts, a comedy. Those are two drag queens on the left who intrude on the lives of a young couple. And I'll let you know next week what I think, but it's playing through next weekend.
Okay.
Wow. And Forever After at the Flea Theater downtown in New York.
Thanks for being with us. Sign up for our email list at gayusatv.org. And thanks for watching.
We'll see you next week.